Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Logic Sports Podcast. This morning, I'm joined by Dan Pleat and Nasir Subar. How are you guys doing?
I'm feeling good.
Yeah, good week in sports. I liked it.
Yeah, we did have a good week in sports as NFL Week 1 kicked off. Also, College Football Week 2, we'll get into that. And also, we'll talk about an interesting story developing in the NBA. But first, I want to get back to what we talked about in the NFL. How a lot of interesting things, and this is one of the weirdest NFL week ones I think I can possibly remember. But what did you guys think about week one?
My takeaway, a lot of offense, kind of. In certain games, it was a lot of offense. The Saints battled it out with Tampa Bay with their backup, Fitzpatrick. He's coming in. He's making a name for himself.
That really got
maybe that QB job might be taken. It might be switched in there.
Yeah, that could be some baby.
My takeaway, Nas just mentioned the offense. I thought the key defensive players, like the premier defensive players, really showed out. I saw Von Miller was all over the place. Both the Watts were doing a lot. I mean, I really liked what I saw out of some of the defenders who are supposed to be the best in the league. You know, I really like to see that.
You didn't want to mention Khalil Mack. We talked about him last week.
Yeah, you didn't want to mention Khalil Mack and the Bears.
Just mention a few people. You know, there were a lot. I'm telling you, there were a lot of really good defenders this week.
Yeah, there was a lot of good defenders, and there was a particular bad quarterback who took the field in Nate Peterman. And I just want to get into him, and I just want to know what Sean McDermott is doing in Buffalo. Why does he keep starting him? Why does he keep doing this? But the news came out that Josh Allen will start week two. Do you think this was the right move?
I mean, is it the right move? Yes. Is it a better move? I don't know. Josh Allen's a little unsure. Nate Peterman's a terrible quarterback. It seems like the Bills are just trotting in circles. They got rid of Tyrod because that whole situation was a mug. But considering him making the playoffs for them, that shows a lot in how this team's going to go forward. But for them to get dominated like that in the first game of the season, it's pathetic.
I'm just glad that McDermott finally pulled the trigger and said Peterman's not starting anymore. Right after the game, they came out, there was a stat that said Peterman posted a .8 QBR, which is obviously terrible. And they said that was just better than his QBR the game that he had 5 picks in 1.5, which was .6. So, I mean, if a quarterback can get .8 and .6 in two of his starts, I mean, that's definitely not someone I would want on my team.
Sounds like a call for Johnny Manziel to return back to the league.
Colin Kaepernick should go to the Bills.
I mean, no. Josh Allen is a good quarterback, but him being a backup just made no sense to me. They tried out the Nate Peterman thing. And you saw in the first half, Nate Peterman came out 5 of 18, 24 yards, and 2 picks. And that was just terrible. How do you go 5 for 18 and 24 yards? I'm pretty sure you can give me some pads, and I can probably do that for you in a half. But overall, I just think the Bills aren't going to go anywhere this year. Yeah, and from the start, they should have just had Josh Allen and just have him get that experience.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was even harder for him because he came in when they were already down, I'm pretty sure, like 40 to nothing. He came in such a bad
spot. The game
was
over, and it made his stats look bad, too. Like, he had less than 100 yards, and, like, he really didn't get in a rhythm. How you just throw a rookie out there like that, that's just bad.
This was your 7th overall pick. I mean, I think you got to kind of throw him out there, like, put him out there in the beginning of the games and then in the clutch, you know, because maybe you never know. That defense could help him get to like, some close games, and he can really learn. Because it probably won't be this year, but if he learns now, then it will really help him for the future.
Yeah, and that experience and them throwing him in a blowout game, that's hurting his confidence because he's already down. What is he really playing
for? He's playing for nothing,
Is the chump change, man? He's playing to possibly get hurt. So what happens if they put him in that game in the second half against a dominating team and they hurt him? Like,
they're better off just keeping Nate Peterman.
Why would you rather switch out Nate Peterman for your future? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it didn't. And another thing that didn't make sense to me was Ryan Fitzpatrick and how he just lit up one of the best defenses from last year in the Saints. He finished with 417 yards and 4 touchdowns without throwing any interceptions. And one thing I noted when I was looking at the stats, he was just spot on. Like, looking at Mike Evans, had 7 targets, caught all 7 of them for 147 yards and got a touchdown. And D-Jack had 5 targets and caught all 5 of them. So he was just finding his targets. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick going in there and not missing a pass and playing elite. But do you think he can keep this up coming into next week against the Eagles?
Well, I think the Eagles obviously have a better defense than the Saints. Like, we had talked about this before. And And I feel like the Saints aren't... Their defense wasn't actually as good as advertised last year. I think that was a kind of a fluke year for them, for their defense. And I think this showed, because I don't believe Fitzpatrick is someone who actually will go out every week and throw 400 yards for 400 yards, four touchdowns and a rushing touchdown. But, I mean, you never know. He could have remade himself and become, and now he actually is pretty good. But I just feel like the Eagles would probably come out and show his true colors, you know.
Yeah, it's too much of a dominant defense. The Saints are good, I agree. I think they're a great defense, but I don't think they're one of the top tiers. I think it was more of a show, and the Eagles have shown that they're dominant. They played their first game, and they dominated that. They had multiple defensive stops when they needed, fourth down stops when they needed them, and they kept the Eagles in the game. So I don't think that he's even going to put up over 300 yards. I think that will be hard for him against a solid defense like the Eagles.
Yeah, I think he's really going to struggle, honestly.
I mean, I wouldn't expect any quarterback to come out there and throw for 400 yards back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
That's kind of unlikely, and especially Ryan Fitzpatrick, but... I wouldn't be completely surprised if he had a good game against the Philadelphia Eagles, though. Just because when I look on paper, just at the secondaries alone with the Saints and the Eagles, they're kind of even. But the Eagles' defense is better than the Saints because they're front seven. They're dominant at stopping the run. So, I mean, if he's spot on like he is, it's going to be hard for, you know, these guys to match up with the speed of D-Jack and Mike Evans. So it's a possibility, it's unlikely, but I just wouldn't be surprised if he did it again just because he's going off of a mojo and he's like in a rhythm right now.
Personally, I think what the Eagles defense needs to do to contain him in the offense is to put Ronald Darby on Mike Evans. If you looked at how he guarded Julio Jones last week, he was amazing. He guarded him perfectly every time. The reason why he had those crazy numbers was because of the other side for Jalen Mills getting burnt on the double move, but... If you look at how Darby's controlling the game in a small sense of what he's doing in his position, he's kind of controlling big plays, big moments. So I feel like we have to put him to be the fire extinguisher for their heat that they got coming in with Mike Evans.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I was just thinking that make the most sense. But would you trust Jalen Mills one-on-one with DeSean Jackson on the island?
I wouldn't put him on the island, though. That's the thing. You have
so
to...
So you're going to have Darby on the island?
No, yes. I think that works fine. Because what you would do, you just have Malcolm Jenkins over top of premier safety. And if Jalen Mills... Let's put it this way. DeSean Jackson is not really a huge route runner. He's more of a just, I'm going
to
straight out go down the field and put my dirt in the field and go. So he's just going to run straight. So if you just give him the space, because you have to respect the speed. He was a one to the Philadelphia Eagle. We know how fast he is. We know what he can do. He's a little bit aged, but we know what he can do as far as speed-wise. So I just feel like you put Jalen Mills on that side. You can put him on an island sometimes, but you got to make sure that you're respecting him. Let him beat you short and then come up and tackle him. He's not a big guy. And then just have Jenkins over top.
Just remember, Jackson isn't completely healthy. He might not even play. So I'm fine with putting Jalen Mills on him. Especially when he's not 100%, because he won't be running 100% if he's not feeling well.
But him not running 100% is still faster than a lot of people in this league.
Yeah.
It is, but I think Mills will contain him enough. That was just one game. I think Jackson had a really great game, but I don't think it will last. He only had 5 catches, just some big ones.
Yeah.
But what do you make of the Saints after this game? Do you think they're not an elite team anymore just because of this loss, or do you just think their defense needs to step up their game?
I'm not worried for them. I think they'll make the playoffs. I think their offense has that much firepower. They still put up 40 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all their defense has to do is now not let up 48 points, which, I mean, 48's a lot. So, I feel like there's not going to be many teams who really come out and do that against them. But they definitely should make some changes to the defense to assure that.
Yes. The Saints, they're too strong of a team. Their defense had a fluke game. It was week one. It's the start of the season. Everyone's still kind of learning into their roles. Not everybody had the best game. So I think they're going to be improved and have a better season.
Yeah, they'll be fine. In my opinion, they're my favorite to go to the Super Bowl still. I mean, as long as their defense steps up. And I know it's bold, but this team is just built from the start. If you look at their offense, just what Alvin Kamara did, he had 17 touches and over 130 yards and also scored a couple times. So just him doing that in the backfield by himself without Ingram being there, they still don't have him yet, so they can really just excel to that next level like they didn't do last year, or they just turned it on a little bit too late last year and lost on a miracle play. But right now, I think the Saints will still be fine, and they're still my favorite to win the Super Bowl. Interesting. But now moving gears a little bit, staying in the NFL, I want to talk about, you know, probably the game of the week, in my opinion, the best game was watching just Aaron Rodgers make that so incredible close. Comeback.
So close.
And it just kind of made me happy because I didn't want to hear Dan coming here talking about, oh, Mitchell Trubisky did this, Khalil Mack, I told you, blah, blah, blah. So, Dan, I'm going to give you the floor right now. I want you to talk about this loss for your air quote Bears.
Well, I don't think it was a complete loss. I think that was that was a game that Aaron Rodgers is destined to win. But I think that the Bears really shot themselves in the foot because they didn't have to give Rodgers another chance. Their coaching kind of hurt it for them.
That's
because
part of being a team, though. Your coaching.
No. Yeah, their defense definitely had to step up. But I'm saying, if Matt Nagy doesn't call a pass play on 3rd and 2, I think that they'll run the ball with Jordan Howard and he'll get a first down. They could just ice the clock at that point.
Well, you want to know what I gotta think? I called it. I said that it would be Green Bay. The atmosphere would be crazy. They're in Lambeau. It's the first game of the week. You can't tell me that Aaron Rodgers, no matter what would happen to him, he hurt his leg, he still came back, and he came back to win the game. He told his defense, if y'all just hold him to no more points, we can do it. They didn't. They held him to 3, but he brought the team back. He puts the team on his shoulder. He dominates. He's the best player in this league, in my opinion. And that's just what it is. He's a great quarterback, and he's elite. He does this consistently.
Yeah, and one thing I took away from that is just Trubisky's not ready yet. You're going to be a quarterback, and you're coming to your second year, and you thought he would make that jump. I know it's only one game, but you come out, and you go up 20-0. So as a quarterback, all you need to really do is just score another touchdown, and you'll be good. But you come out there and throw for under 200 yards, that just looks bad on Mitchell Trubisky. And he had 23 completions, threw the ball 35 times. So he just seems scared to kind of take some risk and actually do something with his targets, and he didn't really use his new targets that much. I'm pretty sure Trey Burton had one catch. So I'm not really sold on the Bears, and I haven't been ever. So I just think the Bears just really showed their true colors when Rodgers came back in the game.
Yeah, it was just week one. I mean, Trubisky, I think he played it like a game manager, and I don't think he should be doing that. And I think,
because he is a game manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think he should. Like, he was.
You can't be something that you're not.
All right, you're just saying that he's just a game manager, but he's not, like, he's only in his second year. He was one of the top picks. I mean, he could definitely go the distance with his team. He just has to kind of start clicking
there's
with
no
them.
Way.
And,
there's
and
no way. There's no way.
There's
no way they go. There's no way they even make to the playoffs this year.
To the Super
said,
Bowl.
There's no way they make the playoffs this year.
There's definitely a way that they can make the Super Bowl.
Maybe not
in this year, but I'm saying the Super Bowl is coming for them. They have a young quarterback. They have a young defense. They got people around them. I mean, I think it will happen soon. Not soon, but in the coming years.
I don't see Trubisky holding up a Lombardi trophy ever in his whole career.
Unless he has like a dominant
Unless
team.
He shows he can come out and actually be amazing and do like what Mitchell Trubisky was supposed to do coming out of North Carolina, which he hasn't, then I don't see a way that this Bears team can succeed.
The thing is, the division. There's still Kirk Cousins who just entered the division, who's going to be there for quite some time. Aaron Rodgers is still the king of that division when he's healthy. And Matthew Stafford, even though he had a shaky game against their first one, he's still a qualified quarterback and showed he can win games.
Yeah, and their defense proved that they're not that great of a defense. You go out there and get Khalil Mack, and yeah, he had a great game, but his impact on the game is hard as a defensive end or outside linebacker. And their defense proved that they were they were looking good when Rodgers was early in the game, and then the backup comes in and he struggles. Yeah, they're looking good, but when Rodgers comes in, no good defense is going to allow 24 points to happen in a quarter and a half. Mm. In my opinion, that's all I got to say about the Bears, really. But overall, I just think it was more Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers just really, I think, is the best quarterback in the NFL talent-wise. Obviously, Brady has all the stats and everything, but Aaron Rodgers, I think, talent-wise, if I had to choose a quarterback, I'm choosing Aaron Rodgers first. Mm. But now we're going to switch gears a little bit and go to college football. And I was watching, I believe, the Arizona State and Michigan State game. And that game was a really good game. And I completely forgot that Herm Edwards was the coach of Arizona State. And I remember last week they had a big win. And this week they come out and they beat a really good Michigan State team. And he's really changing the culture there. So, like, do you think Arizona State eventually, maybe in a year or two, can get to that level when they're competing for a college football playoff spot and ruling the Pac-12 just because of their coach?
I mean, it's going to be very hard, and specifically because of what you just said. They're in the Pac-12. Pac-12 teams don't usually get love. So if they get just, like, one or two losses in a year, it's going to be very hard for them to even enter the college football playoffs unless they make it a – unless they change it to 8 teams, that would maybe make it a little easier. But I think Herm Edwards has them going in the right direction. I think they looked really good their first game. They won by, I believe it was 49-7. And then they come out and beat a ranked Michigan State team who definitely, I don't think you could say is bad. They were definitely,
no, they're good.
They're very good. And I think Herm Edwards, he found his quarterback that he really likes, and Manny Wilkins. He looked pretty solid, 380 yards, a touchdown, just one pick. And I think Herm Edwards really likes what he has, and he's very he's so experienced that I think he'll definitely help them to start succeeding a little bit more.
Yeah.
In a couple of games, I'm looking at their schedule. They play San Diego State, 10th-ranked Washington. They play Oregon State, Colorado, and a 9th Stanford. See, they have some good games that they could show out. If they can continue to win these games, maybe not this year make a run for the college playoffs, but – this is the riding up for them for next season. If they can come out, win games, and they play, their schedule is kind of, it's not, I don't want to say it's easy, but they've got some challenging teams that can really make a name for themselves if they win those games.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what people don't realize in college football is having an elite coach is 50% of the, if you're 50% of the way there, you go there and a kid gets, here's a knock on his door and Herm Edwards is there, it's going to be really hard for that kid to say, no, I don't want to play for you. It's like, you must not have, you must hate like the campus or something. It's definitely not Herm Edwards. And in a game, Herm Edwards is probably one of the smartest coaches in college football right now. He was a good coach in the NFL, so it's just going to translate to the college game. And I think that knowing that, he can get his players right and he can out-coach like the power teams in the Pac-12 to possibly get them a Pac-12 title, and that'll put Arizona State on the map.
Yeah, I over the summer or whenever they had hired him, I remember looking seeing that on SportsCenter, and I just kind of I was kind of interested by it. I looked it up, and he's just, I mean, he has that experience, and I don't see why other people weren't going after him hard. I mean, Arizona State saw something in him that I feel like I see in him, and I feel like a lot of people see in him, because he's been an analyst on television for a while, and he's been a coach before, and he's had success. So I mean, I think that was a great hire. I really do like it, and I think he's got some special things that we're going to see very soon.
Yeah, he does. But now I want to talk about the upcoming games. There's three marquee games that I highlighted coming up this week, and that's number 12 LSU going against number 7 Auburn. Number 22, USC going against Texas, who's unranked, but that's always a big rivalry game every single season. And also number 4, Ohio State without Urban Meyer against TCU. I want to ask you guys, out of these three games, which one can you see most likely being an upset?
See, I'm going to be a little bit biased here, me being the LSU fan that I am. I think they got it this week. I think they can beat this Auburn team. It's talented. I know I put the Auburn in my college playoffs, but this is a game where I think LSU could put themselves up in the rankings. They can boost themselves. I think LSU has had a good first couple of games. They've been solid. They've been able to beat a good team to start off. And then the second game was kind of a cupcake game. They shut them out, but that's still a good confidence boost going into another game. Shutting any team out to 0 points, that goes a long way in your confidence and your team morale. You see the strength in the locker room. They're feeling confident. They're ready to go out and play. So I think Auburn will be the game where they can put a name out for themselves.
I would say out of those three, I think Texas will come through and end up beating USC. Strictly because I don't think USC is actually that good. They only scored 3 points last week, and they're supposed to be a top 25 team. I don't think any top 25 team should score 3 points in any week against any opponent. I think that USC looked so bad, and they're now probably trying to figure stuff out, and I just don't know if it will work. I know Texas only had lost their first game, and that was to Maryland, and I actually think Maryland's pretty good. So I think Texas is coming out now after beating Tulsa, and I think they'll show us a little more because they have Ellinger, who he's older now, he's more experienced, so, and he's got a little bit of help, so I think that we'll probably see Texas pushing USC out of the top 25 at this point.
Do you think, does that Maryland game week one affect you any at all? Just thinking about it?
Yeah, it definitely affects me, but I would say that affects me for different games. I'm strictly saying I think that USC is just not that good, so that's why Texas will take advantage of that. Texas still put up a few points against Maryland, so I think their offense is steady, and their defense will have to definitely show something. But like I said, USC only put up 3 points, so their offense is struggling. So this is where they can take advantage of it.
Well, I'm going to agree with you, Dan, just because I was looking through the Ohio State game and the TCU game. I know Ohio State doesn't have Urban Meyer, but it's just hard for me to pick against this team any given week. And just looking at Texas, they have a great coach in Tom Herman. I think he's one of the best coaches in college football, and Ellinger is a really good player. But USC is just, they don't have the firepower, like you said. They lost Sam Darnold and Ronald Jones. Those are their two biggest, that was their firepower to their offense last year. So losing them, you can really tell just looking at their offense through the first 2 weeks that they're not the same. And I think Texas, especially this being a rivalry game, if I'm not mistaken, Texas is home too. That will play a big advantage in this game. So I'm going to have to go Texas pulling off the upset, mainly because I don't like LSU beating Auburn or TCU beating Ohio State. Exactly. I see those very unlikely.
Yeah.
The last topic of the day, we're going to talk a little bit about basketball, which kind of been the ghost sport recently. It's been baseball and football since football season just started. But yesterday, an interesting comment came out from Danny Green of the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, he was Kawhi Leonard's teammate in San Antonio. Both of these guys got traded to Toronto. But he said it would be hard for him to see Kawhi Leonard leaving the Toronto Raptors next year and going to a different team. Does that kind of shake everything up for LA as a whole market and their plan?
I don't think it shakes it up, just because they can still go out and try and get other players. Kawhi is a dominant player, but they still have LeBron to rely on. That's the main guy that they wanted, that they got. That's the best player in the NBA. So if you have him on your team, you have a chance to go to the finals, no matter who you're going against. So I just feel like they'll have to add another key player, because there's going to be more free agents out there. Boogie will become a free agent after this season. I think KD does as well. But those are two players that they can go out and try and get. It's a long shot for both of them, I'm saying, but I think it's very possible that it can happen.
I think that they're, like you said, their plan probably hasn't changed. I think they'll still go after a bunch of the very like the all-stars that are free agents this year. But I think Kawhi will probably be their number one target. And even though Danny Green's a very reliable source, obviously, so if he says that, then it definitely will be hard for Kawhi to leave. But I don't think that that's affecting LA. I think LA's gonna offer him as much as they think he's worth, and that will probably be a lot. And I think he'll definitely consider it, because he's been saying this whole time that he has his mind focused on being in LA next year. So
I heard that same thing last year from Paul George, who I would have put my life savings that he was going to LA. Last year, and then after you play one year with one team and you see like the culture change from wherever you were, in Paul George's case it was Indiana, and Kawhi Leonard San Antonio, he comes here and now he's in Toronto and he's the guy, and like he knows he's the guy, and it's a city that's really passionate about basketball. So he's definitely a guy who can like that, and he definitely likes the culture there. And that's just one thing, like a player can say he wants to go there, but until he goes somewhere else, you don't really know. And you can't really just count it out. You can't count anything out of the situation, basically.
And the thing is, Kawhi's personality, it kind of flips sides for me as far as him wanting to go to LA. It's flashy. Everyone's watching. It's all these celebrities and stuff. And I just don't think he's that type of player. I feel
Toronto
like
fits him more.
Toronto's quiet. It's a little bit out there. It gives him a chance to just go out and do what he loves and play basketball. And I feel like he has a good team that he could lead. The East got a little bit weak considering the fact that LeBron's going, so that makes it even better for him. He can actually take the Raptors to the finals for once. There's a possibility that he could do it.
Kawhi's going to really have to click with Kyle Lowry, and I think Kyle Lowry seems like an easy guy to really click with. Him and DeMar worked really well together, so if him and DeMar can do it, Kawhi's a much better player. He's he's much more than just like a 3-and-D player. He's when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the league. So if he can bring them to the playoffs and bring them far in the playoffs and really, like I said, click with Kyle Lowry and have that chemistry, it will definitely be hard to leave Toronto.
The Claw.
Yeah, I think it will really be hard to leave Toronto because he can have a whole conference to himself. All the stars are over out west and everything, and the East has the young and up-and-coming stars, and Kawhi is still kind of a young and up-and-coming star. If you look at, like, Giannis and more of the younger guys like Embiid and Simmons on the Sixers, there's also Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, but I think Kawhi really has the best star potential. Playing at everyone's best potential, I would choose Kawhi Leonard because that's one guy I've seen, even like being young, going against in San Antonio, going against LeBron in Miami, that super team, he showed out, and I think he basically won that series for San Antonio. He really did, and he won MVP just to do that. Him going against LeBron, it really makes me think that he can really change this Toronto's culture and everything. And Toronto's kryptonite was LeBron, and now he's gone. DeMar DeRozan's gone, but you sub DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, and you already had the best record in the East last year. That just calls for a recipe of adding more success to their team and elevate them to winning games in the playoffs, not just the regular season.
Yeah, Kawhi's only, he's only 27 years old, so he's, once he's back from his injury, like, completely healthy, I think, like, I don't see why he won't be as, the unstoppable player he was. Like, he can get to the rack, he can shoot the three, and then he gets back on defense, he's the defensive player of the year when he's 100%. And that's, I don't see, like, how he can't bring go to the finals with his team, especially in the weak East.
Yeah, the thing is, I think they have good depth for that team. They have a lot of returning players from last season. They had the young kid Wright. They had Fred VanVleet. They have good potential off the bench, and these are solid players that will play on any other roster in the league, and that would be productive because they're productive for this team. So I just feel like you giving him another team, and Danny Green, another kind of shooter that you would always, that you could always have on the court, and he has experience. And
he knows Danny Green.
Exactly. That's a close. I'm not sure how close they are, but that's a friend coming from another team with him. So that's another connection that you can have, and he's an experienced player. He's won a championship with San Antonio. They both have. So they can pass down that knowledge of winning to the rest of the team and make them even better.
I mean, in my opinion, if you're Kawhi, that once he puts on that Raptors uniform for the first time and goes through the whole season and knows, like, this is his team and what their team is going to do this year, and he just, like, gets passionate. He's going to become passionate about the team. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be hard just to throw that away, just to go to L.A. And I know you're going to L.A. with LeBron and everything, but at the end of the day, that might not be the best case scenario for Kawhi Leonard. So this could be the best for Kawhi to really excel as a superstar and being on his own, and we can really see what he does. Because in San Antonio, when he was young, he was playing with Duncan and Ginobili and Parker. I know they're up there in age, but they're still producing. Mm-hmm. And then recently, he's playing with LaMarcus Aldridge. But now he has a guard with him, like Kyle Lowry, and I think both of these guys can both be All-Stars this year and lead Toronto to the NBA Finals. But I'm not sure if it will happen, but there's a good chance.
Is Serge still on the Raptors?
Yeah, I think Serge is. They have Valanciunas still. Yeah, they have a good team.
They have the young guy, OG Anunoboy.
He was on LeBron last
he's
year,
a good
I'm pretty
defender.
Sure.
So. They have a really good defensive team. With Kawhi, they bring over Danny Green, also, who's one of the better shooting guards who can also play
a good
defense.
He's a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah. Serge Ibaka, you know, he blocks every shot.
What is his name?
Pascal Siakam.
Siakam.
Yeah. He's good.
They got some good players.
Their depth is what really makes them really good. So, like, them in Boston, I think, will be competing because both of these teams have the star power and they have the depth to really, they can afford to lose someone, mm-hmm. and they'll still be okay. But Kawhi is the main piece in Toronto, and I think once he knows that he's the main piece, he's going to stay there. And why wouldn't you believe Danny Green? So why wouldn't you want to believe Danny Green? But now we're talking about the top five teams. I want to bring that up a little bit. Who are your top five teams in the NBA?
In the NBA? All right, my number one team has to be Golden State. That's a freaking all-star team. Multiple all-NBA players, multiple future Hall of Famers. That has to be the number one. My number two team is going to be the Celtics. Coming in healthy this year, they're getting Gordon Hayward back, they're getting Kyrie back, and they still have a whole bunch of youth that just went through an experienced year of playoffs. Mm-hmm. And they made it pretty far, so I'd have to go them number two. My number three team, I'm going to go the Rockets. Them adding Carmelo, I'm not really sure how that's going to go, but they had a productive team this year, and they were one game away from making it to the finals over the Warriors.
If Chris Paul was healthy, I think they might have.
They could have done it. I believe that, too.
Because they had two chances with Chris Paul. That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Number four team, I'm going to go with the guy we were just talking about, Kawhi and the Raptors. And my number five team, I'm going to go our hometown Philadelphia 76ers. I think we can make a strong push this year with Embiid coming back, Ben Simmons, them getting a little bit, them touching their waters in the playoff experience, and a guy that's really not talked about enough, Dario Saric. I think he's an impactful player, and we have one of the best defensive 3-and-D type of players in the league, yeah, Robert Covington.
My five, it starts similar to this year's. It was Warriors and Celtics. Same reasons. Warriors, they just added Cousins after a championship. They look really like they're gonna get another one. Celtics next because they almost got to the NBA championship without Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward. So with them and now with a backup center, they got first round and Robert Williams, who I think will be a very good impact for them. I think they're second right now, and they'll probably make a push and get to the championship unless anyone comes out of nowhere really. Next, I actually have the Lakers. I think LeBron makes any team he goes to obviously a contender, but he brought so many experienced players with him that can go along with the young guys really well, because the young guys they have so much potential in all of them, and Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart. So I think they should mesh well, the old guys and the young guys, and they'll really play like a different game that nobody will really have seen before. Next, I have the Rockets. Like I said, same kind of reasons. They almost went to the championship if Chris Paul was healthy, they might have. So they lost Trevor Ariza, but they just paid Capella, who I think it will definitely help against Cousins when they play the Warriors. But right now, I have them at four, so we'll see if they can make any moves during the season or before it. And lastly, yeah, I have the Raptors. Kawhi, I think LeBron makes any team a contender at that point. You put him on a team that is always good in the regular season, and Kawhi's always good in the playoffs, so maybe that will be, like, they're good in the regular season, and Kawhi will help them in the playoffs. So I have them at five. So those are my five: Warriors, Celtics, Lakers, Rockets, Raptors.
Well, my top five is a little bit more interesting. I'm going to have the Warriors number one, obviously. I can't even make up an excuse to not have them at number one. Number two, I'm going to have the Toronto Raptors, just because they had the best record in the NBA last year, I'm pretty sure, in the regular season, mm-hmm. with DeMar DeRozan. They lose him, but they get Kawhi Leonard. And I know Boston didn't have Kyrie or Gordon Hayward, but still, no matter what, I think Kawhi Leonard, if he is what he was in San Antonio, if he comes to Toronto, they'll be the second-best team in the NBA, just because look where they were last year. They play like a team. If Kawhi comes in and gels with those guys, they'll be perfectly fine there. Number three, I'm going Boston Celtics. Basically, Boston, they're so deep. Their starting lineup is just ridiculous, in my opinion. And their bench is also ridiculous. They're going to have probably Marcus Smart, Rozier, and Aaron Baines, who's a pretty solid role player, come off the bench. And their starting five is just a whole bunch of forwards with Kyrie Irving and Al Horford. So, and they also, I think, have the best coach in the NBA, Brad Stevens.
Yeah, he's so smart.
So basically, I think Boston has a really good upside to beat Toronto to get to the NBA Finals. I think Toronto has it, and Boston's right there. But one thing I want to watch for Boston is just how Tatum excels from a great rookie year. Can he do that again and step his game up another level? Four, I'm going to have the Houston Rockets. I have the Rockets because they, like I said, like Nas said earlier, they're a game, two games away from beating the Golden State Warriors. Chris Paul got hurt in game six or game five, and they almost won even without him. So they also added Melo over Ariza, and Melo kind of he makes them a little bit poison, maybe. That could maybe make them worse. I think that they low-key did downgrade from Ariza to Melo just because of the play style. Ariza's going to play more with Harden and Chris Paul, and they need defense on that team, and Melo's going to come in, and I don't know if he's going to start or if he's not going to start, but I feel like he's going to take shots from Harden and take shots from Chris Paul because he's got to shoot anything. So Melo sees that, he's going to want to shoot.
See, the thing is about that, I want to just put this out because he did say that he think Melo could be poison. I can see what you mean by that as far as him wanting to take a lot of shots and him kind of like messing up with the flow that they had, because Trevor Ariza is a different player and he's a great veteran to have. But I think this offense kind of fits for Melo just because he does like to take a lot of shots. This offense likes to push the pace. They'll get the ball. They like throwing. They like getting shots up. I think Carmelo's going to come in. I think he knows that he's a starter, that he can score. But he knows that the vocal points for this team and why they've been so successful is James Harden. Chris Paul is another, and Chris Paul is, of course, the X factor as well. But James Harden is the main scorer that you want to get the ball to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It's just Melo. Melo can either, I think, will be either be really good for them or just makes them worse, because Ariza was a great defender for them, and Melo's not going to bring any defense, really.
Yeah.
And on offense, really, they're going to be pushing the pace up and down, and Melo's not really a guy who I've really seen go up and down the court since he was in Denver. So I wanted, like, it's going to be hard for him to mix in there, and I think he's going to be less of an important piece of this team than people think.
But you got to think about what Dan said about Clint Capela getting signed, them bringing him back.
Yeah.
I know Melo's not the best the best defensive player, but him having a backbone like Capela, a lanky 7-footer, I think that goes a long way, because he is a shot blocker.
It does.
And I think that helps out a lot.
It does, but in the end of the day, you're going in the playoffs, you're going against Paul George, you're going to have Melo guard him, and you're going against LeBron now. He's in the West. You want Melo to guard him. You want Melo to guard KD. So, like, that's what I'm saying. Ariza isn't the best player, but defensively, I would rather have Ariza over Melo.
Yeah.
So that's all I got to say about Houston. But fifth, I'm going to have LA, just because they have the potential to be the second-best team in the NBA. It's going to be hard for them to beat the Warriors, probably, most likely impossible. But I just saw what LeBron did in Cleveland, and that team was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And he comes in here with LA with a young core like Lonzo and Kuzma, and he also brought in a whole bunch of veterans. This team has the potential to be good even without LeBron on the team. Maybe like a bottom feeder Western Conference playoff team. So like now you add LeBron, that elevates your team to conference championship automatically. And I think the Lakers can take that next step because of LeBron. And LeBron will help their young players progress.
Can I just bring up, since you brought up LeBron and the Cavs and how bad they are, let's think about how great LeBron was last season. He played all 82 games.
That's crazy.
And he did not miss a single beat last season. Now you put him on a new team and he brought depth with him.
Yeah.
Now he can rest. This is perfect for them.
Yeah, it's perfect. LeBron is going to probably take some games off and just go to the beach or something. Like, he deserves it. He really does. But he makes his team so much better, and all the players that they added makes that team so much better. And I probably think the Lakers can outbeat the Rockets and the Thunder and all the other good Western Conference teams and probably go against the Warriors, but they're not going to get that much progress against the Warriors. But that rounds out my top five. And before we close today's show, I want to talk about the week two kicking off in the NFL. I just want quick game predictions of the Ravens-Bengals.
Tonight, I feel like I'm going to go with the Ravens. Joe Flacco looked really good. I know it was against the Bills, but that game kind of gives him confidence. Like, he knows he still got it. He was a Super Bowl winner, so he looked really good. So if he can come out and play the Bengals like he played the Bills, which he probably could because the Bengals are not a great team, then I think they'll pull out this victory. I'm going to go with 28-17.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Ravens as well. The Ravens had a good first week to start off. Their defense was dominant. Flacco was getting the ball out there quick. He's making the right decisions. He was putting points up on the board. It was against a struggling Bills team. I'm aware of that, but that is a confidence booster, and he's enjoyed playing the game and coming back into it, and he's trying to get his voice in as one of those elite quarterbacks, because he's always a controversial quarterback when it comes to that. So I think he'll outplay them. I think Andy Dalton might struggle against this defense. This front seven is pretty good. They'll be coming at him all game. I'm going to have to go with a score of 24-10.
Wow. I'm going to go Cincinnati. In my opinion, Cincinnati is not a good team. But in my opinion, Baltimore is also not that great of a team. And I know they dominated 47-3 against the Bills. And that game probably felt like a scrimmage to them, but you have to go from that and then bring yourselves down and then come right into a divisional playoff game, an AFC North divisional. I'm not playoff game. I apologize. Just a divisional game, an AFC North divisional game is always challenging, no matter what. Those teams step up, and those games are normally nationally televised, like this one is tonight. I'm going to have to say that the Bengals win this one just because I'm not sold on Joe Flacco. He definitely feels RG3 and Lamar Jackson breathing down his neck. So every pass he makes is really being evaluated. And I think he might make an early mistake that hurts his team. But I'm going to go Bengals in a high-scoring one, 31-27.
Yeah, I mean, divisional games are definitely the hardest to predict because even though one team might be so much better than another team in the division, they see each other so well, so many times that they just always play really good games.
Look at the Browns versus the Steelers.
A few years ago, late in the year, the Patriots lost a game to the Jets, one of the last games of the season, which helped the Jets make the playoffs. I mean, you just never know sometimes with divisional games.
Yeah, you never know. And I think that both teams are okay, and they could be competing for the division depending on how the Steelers look. We don't know yet, but overall, I think the Bengals, they don't have a better team, but this game, I think they can eke it out just by a little bit.
And it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, it definitely will be. And we'll talk to you guys Sunday for the pregame show at 10 a.m. We'll also have Damir Jenkins and Nick Bonomo, two of our close friends, in the studio with us. Dan will not be here. He'll be in Florida down in Tampa watching the Eagles game.
Go Birds.
Hopefully they lose that one.
Go Birds.
And my Cowboys play the Giants on Sunday night. We're going to get that win. But everyone have a good Thursday and enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you Sunday.